Hey, my name is Tania. I'm here with my best friend, Emmanuel. I'm 50 years old. Today is Wednesday, June 19, 2019, and we are here in Chicago, Illinois, with my best friend, Emmanuel, and I'm ready to enjoy this conversation.
My name's Emmanuel. I'm 37 years old, and today's date is June 19, 2019, and we're in Chicago, Illinois, and I'm here with Tania, who's my friend, and as I like to call you, my sister in the struggle.
Oh, thank you.
Tania, first of all, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you so much.
I know that you recently celebrated a milestone birthday, 50 years old. How do you feel about that?
With milestone, you know, I'm 50 and I feel like I'm 25 though. But, you know, regarding to Stonewall, I think that the movement empowered me before I was even born. So I didn't have no knowledge. There was no history about the Stonewall that I ever actually read or learn about it into, I would say, 5-6 years ago when I actually got involved into the movement. And I think that Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, they were so committed to create change in the LGBTQ community that just by learning about their history, it empowered me to stand up for social justice, especially for trans women.
Mm-hmm. When you think about now, right now, like turning 50, when you reflect back on your childhood, what does that look like? Where is that? Give me that picture.
I can give you the picture, I'm from Mexico. My hometown is El Transvaal, Michoacán. My childhood, it was like I was happy and I was unhappy. I thought that what I was living, it was normal. But me growing up, I remember when I was probably like 4 years old, I already knew that I was a trans woman. I knew that I was a woman. I just didn't know how to express it. But for me, yes, the way that I was acting, playing with dolls, with my sister clothes, with my girlfriends, for me, it never was actually a masculinity that I have actually reflect. So my parents, unfortunately, didn't have no knowledge, didn't have no time to actually pay attention to me and to see that I was just different. I wasn't a girl and I wasn't a boy. But they have other words to describe my way of act, which in Mexico they call jotos or maricón, and for me that's a very offensive word. Being I was bullied. I was a victim of bullying just for being me. And I was just like, why those people have to be so cruel? Why those people have to be calling me those names? I don't understand. I didn't understood and the moment and the time. It was like awfully, yes, go home, lay down in bed in my bed and cry. And I didn't have a healthy child development.
What is your family like? Like, who? How many brothers, sisters?
I have six brothers and three sisters. I'm the ninth of the family. through these years, I've been navigating for them to understand that I'm part of the family, that I'm a trans woman. I'm a very proud trans woman of color or trans indigenous woman, that I just want to live. I want love. I want respect. I just want the best that life has to offer. Unfortunately, even a couple of days ago, one of my brothers, he actually have a doctorate degree. But inside, he is so, how can I say this? Ignorant. Mm-hmm. His ignorance in life doesn't match with his doctorate degree. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want to understand that a trans woman is part of his family. And when I was talking to my sister-in-law, she was like, you know what, Tanya? You know, I'm so proud of you. My kids are so proud of you. I've been teaching them to love you, respect you for who you are. Unfortunately, your brother, he still have machismo. So he's so empowered. He just wants to his malehood to be some power that he doesn't want to accept. He doesn't want to talk about me. We can actually sit one day or we can be at the table and talk. But when it comes to talk to his friends or other people outside of the family, that was like Tanya doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think for me, my family, their acceptance or lack of, I think, comes from religion, from them converting to like Christianity when they first immigrated here. What do you think keeps your family from supporting you completely or wholly in the way that you would like?
Well, fortunately, like second generation, they don't think that way. Their mindset is so is totally different, even with Catholics. But I think Catholics have played a big role. Religion has played a big role when it comes to acceptance. They were okay for me to be gay, to be a gay man. But when I decided to go into transition and be who I wanted to be Tanya, then our life perspective changed totally. And their beliefs, their prejudice, they still be irresponsible for not, I'm gonna rephrase it. I had a great relationship with my parents, but, with some of my siblings, we still don't have the relationship, which I should care, but I don't care. Because even if we're siblings, they're not really part of my life. I move on. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to beliefs, it's really hard to break those beliefs. And for this is just my personal opinion. I don't think that that any religion leaders should have the right to encourage hate. Mm-hmm. For me, that's hate.
Tanya, can you tell me a little bit about when you first immigrated here? When was that? When did you leave? I knew you mentioned growing up in Mexico. When did you immigrate and what was that experience like for you as a person who was in transition?
I always going to be in transition from one stage to another stage. I think that life is about transition. But when I actually immigrated to the United States, it was in 1985. When I came to stay with some of my siblings that they were already living here. I actually never really had a relationship with them because they moved, they migrate from Mexico to the United States probably 10 years before I did. So for me, it was like being with strangers. I didn't have the connection with them. So when I came to the United States, when I came to Chicago, and then I went to take some English classes and I moved on to different programs, I found that I wasn't the only person who was suffering. I found other LGBTQ members that they give me the courage to just, we usually say the phrase, be out of the closet. Mm. Yes, be out of the closet, yes. It means be you. Don't hide yourself. So when I actually decided to come and confront my family and tell them, you know what, I'm gay. And they were like, you know what, that's fine. You can stay in the house. We don't have a problem. But we're not going to allow you to bring your friends. We're not going to allow you to bring your partner. You're not allowed to say that you're gay. So I move out. I left. After that, I started my transition, my physical transition to be a trans woman. And all of a sudden, I was working. I remember I was working at Midway. And through my transition, actually, I lost my job and I ended up in the streets. And when I'm saying that I ended up in the streets, it's not that I was homeless. It's just that I didn't have no income. So I have to find a way to survive, not to live my life with freedom, just to survive. So I ended up doing surviving activities. When it comes to when I'm saying about surviving activities, I'm talking about sex work. I'm talking about drugs. I'm talking about chaplaining. All I got criminalized. I got all those cases in my background that I never thought that it was gonna really mess up my life. But in the moment, all you think is about, you know what, I have to live. This is what I have to do in order to be me and to stay alive.
Yeah, when I was thinking that, you know, what are some things that maybe cross your mind as you begin to do these activities, or as you begin to find different ways of surviving that maybe are things that in your childhood you probably never thought, this is what I'm gonna do in order to live my life, right? And so it becomes kind of like this priority of, you know, it's either I completely go back into the closet and not become my true self, or I am my true self in the obstacles that society, the systems, are putting on me.
Exactly. You know, I think my family, they're like, some of my siblings, they're more embarrassed of my background than accepting Tanya.
I want to ask you a little bit about that path, right? That eventually, I think, leads you to kind of interact with, for lack of a better word, the criminal justice system, which has a lot of injustices in itself. Can you talk about how, because I know that it escalated, right? It wasn't just one, you don't end up in like federal prison or in an immigration detention center because you were shoplifting, or do you, right? So it's like, what are the things that led to that?
Well, one of the things that it led to for me to be in prison and to be under ICE detention, It was that when we actually go back 30 years ago, and we actually go back 50 years ago when Marsha and Sylvia started this revolution. 50 years ago, we're criminalized just for being in the street dressed as a woman. 20 years after, I still got arrested, yes, for me being Tanya, being in the street. Yes, for Tanya, not to use the right bedroom that they think I should use. How is it possible that I got criminalized for just being me? So those little things, those arrests, actually lead to escalated for me to do different activities in order to survive. If somebody would have gave me the opportunity to have a job, if somebody gave me the respect, if somebody would reach out to me and say, you know what, Tanya, there's a program. We have a program for you. Unfortunately, it wasn't. Nobody reached out. Nobody did the correctly outreach. And when I talk about correctly outreach, there are so many programs, and there were so many programs. But those programs are not reachable to our Latinx community. Actually, today I was just thinking, and I was gonna post something on Facebook that it crossed my mind, and I was like, you know what, Tanya, trans woman, trans mentoring woman should take a different encouragement. When I talk about that, what I mean is that in our culture, it's more about, I'm gonna mentor you how to do your physical transformation. This is your transition. It shouldn't be a physical transformation more important than any other, there are so many other programs. So, not just about, okay, go and get breast, hormone therapy, all this stuff, all these therapies that they actually available, but they also promoting you, encourage you, mentoring you to do sex work. It's part of our culture. Mm-hmm. I'm working and breaking the cycle. I'm breaking and breaking the cycle because I'm alive. I can sit here and tell my story. Many of my trans sisters, unfortunately, they're not here to tell the story. They don't have a voice. They didn't have a voice. And they're not going to have a voice. Because they're dead. Our sisters, our immigrant sisters, that they're still on the journey, trying to reach out, trying to seek asylum in the United States. Many of them, they have not even made it to the border. Many of them had actually been taken their asylum petitions, and they're under ICE detention, and because the lack of medication, some of them which their HIV positive, they don't have the right medication. Why?
I know it's really complicated, the different ways in which you the system interacted with you, right? How do you end up coming out of that?
I'm still working on it. I've been in the system for 3 decades. And 4 years ago, at my last arrest, I ended up in detention. I've been deported and removed from this country a couple times. I never knew the law. I never knew, nobody ever told me that I could I could submit an application for asylum. And I understand the situation for trans folks on detention because I've been there. Everything that is being said in the news is not even a little piece compared for what we actually live inside. After I got released, I made my commitment that I was gonna stand up for social justice. I reached out myself to the CARP program. I came to the CARP program and I encouraged myself that I was gonna break a cycle of poverty, a cycle of humiliation, a cycle of hate. And I've been working. And that.
The CARA program for you, I think one of the questions that I had for you when you invited me to the celebration, there was a celebration of you finishing the program, and it was a beautiful event. And I kept thinking the whole time that what was it about this program that it worked for you, right? That there's so many organizations, right, who are trying to find ways to support the trans community. Let's be very generous, right, yes, in saying that, because we know that a lot of organizations say they're doing that and they're not. But how, what do you think the model worked and helped you as a trans woman?
When I came to the CARP program, I was so naive. And I was very vulnerable because I have lost my parents at the same time.
They passed away?
They passed away. Mm. So I was so hurt and I just didn't know, you know, what to expect from this program. And for me, just to take the courage to go in the circle and talk and say, you know what? I have to break the chains. I have to just stand up and embrace that I'm a trans woman, that I have the power to just break it and work on this and embrace little Alex that he was there. I didn't have, Tanya wasn't there. When Alex was a boy, when Alex was a little boy, nobody was there to care about him. So, just to embrace myself, to embrace the little boy, and to hold him and say, you know what, Alex? Me and you, we're gonna break this. We're gonna walk together. And encourage and educate society that we are here, that me as a trans woman, I should not hide. I should not take any hate, rejection, and everything that it would lead other trans women to be caught in the justice system.
It sounds like, you know, there's this process, right, of like healing that continues from that. That was a very healing moment for you in terms of that it's not just this program, right? That it was a way of kind of reflecting on kind of the past and sort of, you know, confronting how you were going to move forward.
You know, I never really thought that my background, because my background is from over 10 years ago. And I thought that after actually my asylum petition was accepted, I thought that like, oh, okay, you know what? I'm going to move on. I'm not going to have any problem. But I have to face other many barriers that all trans folks are facing, especially with the name change. For me, going to different interviews when I was job hunting, there were... I would ace my interview and they would say, you know what, Tanya, you're the best. But after I actually provide my identification without my name change, they would totally have a second thought to hire me.
So why haven't you been able to change your name?
I wasn't able to change my name a couple of years ago because my felony conviction. And you, when you actually have a felony conviction, and all depends on the class of your felony. In my case, I have to wait 12 years. So I came to the California in 2015, so I have to wait 2 more years. So in 2017, I was able to change my name. When I reached out to TLGP, Transformative Law Justice Project, which we dedicate our mission is to name change mobilization. They have a proposal for me. If I wanted to take the lead, to take a leadership to challenge Illinois law when it comes to name change filing restrictions. I thought that it was a great opportunity, and it has been a great opportunity. After I changed my name, I thought that it was going to be easier, that I already changed my name. I don't have to explain to nobody when it comes to any customer service. I'm going to give you an example. Yesterday I went to the hospital and I changed my name already. I changed my gender already. But for some reason, I still have a problem with my insurance. They haven't been able to change my name. So I have to educate a hospital how to do registration, how to do an intake for a trans woman. And this is not the first time. This is the third time that I have to train them. So name change and pronouns are very important to trans folks. You cannot put a trans woman in jeopardy by calling them by their legal name, because they haven't been able to change their name. And just give you a little bit a scenario. I was at the waiting area. There's come the medical assistants and say, Alejandro. And everybody turn around like, who's Alejandro? So they look at me, all their eyes, they were at me. They were like, what the fuck? Excuse my word, but I mean, that was the expression. What about if this a person next to me that is transphobic? What about if I get beat up, live in the hospital? It's unacceptable. And I'm not gonna let this pass by. I took actions. I talked to a manager. And he didn't know how to handle it. And I talk about training. I've been talking about me go and do some training. Because in public spaces, they still don't have the training.
Just out of curiosity, what was their justification? Like that they said, because people always think like, well, my intent wasn't to cause harm. Right. And so, but you, like you said, you changed your name, your gender marker on your ID. They know that. It's just your insurance card that doesn't have that. And so why would they go by the insurance card and not by all the other records that are probably listed in your file?
Oh, they said that it was a mistake. And I told them, this is the third mistake. This is the third time.
Mm-hmm.
So I work in the medical field.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to do registrations. I know the law. The law says that they have to call you. You haven't been able to change your name. They have to call you by your preferred name. Mm-hmm. So I have to train a manager. What was the difference of a preferred name and a legal name change? Because mm-hmm. after I was talking to him, he still repeated preferred name. And I was like, that's not my preferred name. That's my legal name. Do you know the difference?
You're an activist, you're an organizer, you're an advocate for so many people and for yourself, really, because you've had to be, right? Like you said, you were educating the hospital and you've done that on multiple occasions. You don't have to do that, especially if you're a patient, right? No patient should have to be there, be in that position that you're in. I know that you're carrying all of that into the work that you do now. As you said, you know, for the past 6 years, you've have been dedicated to doing this work. What's your vision for your community, for our community?
Well, for our community, first of all, you know, I'm going to be, like you know, I'm going to be launching Ser El Cambio, which is a new program, a new re-entry program specifically for trans women. When I came to the CARA program, I was able to have family support and I have stable housing. But in order to be part of the CARA program, you have to have stable housing. And one of the biggest barriers that trans women has to integrate into society, even if they just getting released from prison or they getting released from immigration, is housing. So Ser El Cambio is going to be a transitional housing, and our mission is to connect them with multiple programs that they already available. And if they're not available, we're going to create those programs, because we, the people, have the power.
One thing that you shared with me, I think it was one of the times that we got to get to sit together over coffee and have a really long conversation about our lives and what connects us to this work, was your altar at home. You know, your spirituality practice is a big part of your life. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I've been initiated into the Yoruba religion. Kirijanga was my godmother, and mostly the whole city knows who Kirijanga was. Kirijanga was a great female impersonator, performer in Chicago, but she also was an activist and a very spiritual woman that empowered me to have that leadership as in a spiritual leader. We all energy, and we all connected. If we actually see as spirituality, it's just like a network. Our energy travels all over. Our thoughts travels all over, just like the network. So for me to have that connection with the whole world, it just made me feel that I'm doing, that I'm gonna, that with them power, I know that I'm gonna be able to change someone's lives. I know I'm not gonna be able to change the world, but I have to play my part. And what I'm doing also, something that I learned in the CARA program is that, how do you want people to remember you? And I remember the first time when I went to the circle, and I was like, how do I want people to remember me? I want people to remember me as Tanya, as an activist, as Tanya, as an advocate, as Tanya, as she's she was standing up always for social justice, and she created this program for trans women, for trans immigrant, for trans women of color that had been impacted by the justice system. Mm-hmm. So creating change means helping someone else to change their life positively.
With Miss Kitty, you know, she was, I got to meet her at one point, and she was a big leader within the trans community, specifically the Latina trans community here in Chicago, at a different time too, right, than we have today. I think mm-hmm. there's more visibility around trans issues. But at that time, right, with Miss Kitty, she played such a huge role in guiding people, specifically trans women. Mm-hmm. She's your like spiritual godmother, mother. What would you say? How would you describe her?
Well, she's my spiritual godmother, and I think she did a great job and create this how can I say this? She was able to provide with work to so many trans women who are into the show business. And that was her way of being an activist, being able to provide work for someone.
How do you think that she would, what would the message, her message be? Because I know that you're in communication, like you said, with the network, right? Spiritually. Like, what is the message, do you think, that we're getting today from the spiritual world around this, the fight for trans rights?
I think her message right now would be, my ahijada, you're doing the right thing. My godchild, you're doing the right thing. Let them know. Allow them to listen to you. And yes, deliver a concise message.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
In 10 years?
You'll be 60.
I'll be still doing the work, especially with El Cambio, and providing so many services for our youth and our community and education. For me, I think creating educational programs will definitely create a change.
And with your family?
I love my family. I do actually have a relationship with some of them. And I'm not going to be I'm not going to say waste my time and people who doesn't agree, but that's their personal opinion, and they have to work on that, not me working on them. So new generations don't think that way. New generations love Tanya.
Where do you think we'll be in 10 years?
Me? Yes, being the director of Ser El Cambio and continue doing this great work. And especially, as you know, for the name change, we still have... We don't know how long is it going to take, because with TLGP, we just filed a lawsuit against Illinois with some of the felony restrictions. So I not even know how long is it going to take, and I not even know how is it going to lead me. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I can run for an office. You never know, everything is possible.
That would be wonderful. I want to thank you so much for, one, your leadership. And really, I do believe in the universe, and I believe that we are all connected, like you say. And I think, and I have that whenever, you know, I connect with you, and I know that that has a lot to do with just the work that we're all trying to do. And so I just want to thank you for really being a voice and for advocating and for using that energy to make a huge difference, which you've already made. And so whether you see the fruits of that today, I hope that you know that you have already planted so many seeds.
Thank you so much. You know, I love you to death.